Calling all lovers of mystery and fans of a good story. If you haven't already heard me talk about June's journey, you're in for a treat. It's time to don your detective hat in this free hidden object mobile game that delves into the captivating journey of June Parker, a self-proclaimed detective on a quest to unravel the mystery surrounding her sister's untimely death. In June's journey, you get to play as June, deciphering clues and unveiling secret plots within thousands of beautifully illustrated scenes. And did I mention it's set in the glitzy 1920s? New chapters are added weekly, so you will never run out of new thrills to uncover, and you can also personalize and decorate your very own Orchid Island where the story takes place. How sharp are your detective skills? Find out when you download June's Journey on your Android or iOS device, or play online via Facebook Games. Your detective journey awaits.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Welcome to I'm Listening, the Frasier fan podcast. I am your host, Anita Flores, and each episode I have a special guest. I discovered this particular gentleman on Twitter, as he has a sizable following, and his name is Anthony Oliveira. Anthony Oliveira, according to Twitter, is a writer, turbo gay, dumpster raccoon. And his handle is Mia Koopa. Am I pronouncing that right?
Well, insofar as it is a word.
Yeah. Well, welcome. Anthony.
Thank you for having me. I'm delighted to be here. It's a terrible Latin pun, and I apologize for it. If I had known the account would grow as big as it did, I would have thought more carefully about my Twitter handle.
What would you, where did this, obviously writer makes sense, but I've never heard turbo gay or dumpster raccoon. Are those just phrases you lovingly made up, or they exist somewhere else?
I don't know where they came from, but they feel right to me. I'm sort of negotiating my latent furriness right now on Twitter. maybe identify with raccoons. The dumpster raccoon thing is because I feel like that's what I do. I sort of just like rummage through the dumpster of pop culture and find things that I like. And sort of like, that's my modus operandi. I'm not very good about, I mean, I'm in academia, but I'm not good at like dividing high class from high culture from low culture. So that's what the raccoon thing about. I think the turbo thing is it's probably just a function of being a 90s kid. Like everything was turbo when I was a kid. Nothing's turbo anymore. We don't talk about turbo or cyber. Those sort of like prefixes have disappeared. So maybe I'm a cyber turbo gay.
Oh, cyber gay. I mean, every time I hear the word cyber, I just remember that, you know, I was fully into the AOL teen chat rooms as a teen.
Yes.
Yeah. And I definitely had to learn the lingo because I didn't know what cybering was. I also didn't know what ASL was for a while. So when somebody would say ASL ? I'd go, yes, that's me. ASL.
Yeah, I think we came of age at the same time, sort of like in the Habbo Hotel era. Do you remember Habbo Hotel?
No.
It was just like, it was like a chat room, but you had like a little digital avatar. It's like perfect for teens because they could like design themselves. But yeah, I came from the same moment. I was like, the word cyber for me invokes like the cyber demons from Doom. I played a lot of Doom as a kid. Like you can tell I'm a 90s kid. One of the ways you can tell I'm a 90s kid is I'm on a Frasier podcast right now. but
yes,
I would literally finish watching Frasier and then go downstairs to the computer and hit the dial up and play Doom with my friends.
It seems so. Like in a sense you and I had I don't know if you played sports. I didn't do any activities at all.
No, ma'am.
I honestly was just watching a lot of TV and eating, like, you know, I never played video games, but I very much enjoyed doing like four horror movies in a row with one of two only friends that I had, which I'm not complaining about, just to survive that time period of middle school and high school. I feel like if you have one friend, That's enough, in my opinion.
Yeah, I definitely did. And like, look at us now. My friends in that era wrote the theme song for my podcast. So like, these things perpetuate themselves.
I love it. Now, an academic, I've never been brave enough to ask, what is an academic? Is it a teacher? Is it a person in graduate school? What's an academic? I'm a comedian,
well,
so I don't know
much. Bio because you're a bunch of different things for a while. I'm actually done my dissertation. I've defended it. So I'm a doctor now. yes, Dr. Anthony Oliveira.
But
no, there's no like appeal. It's funny, like one of the autocompletes, if you try to Google my name, is Anthony Oliveira, PhD. And it's because so many people get mad at me online that they want to know what my degree is in so they can sort of like try to puncture whatever argument I have. but I just finished my dissertation. I'm done. So I'm maybe going to try to find a tenure track job, but I'm enjoying what I'm doing so much that I might just keep doing this stuff instead.
I'm glad you like it. I mean, obviously, because you have this Twitter following, and this is something I'm not familiar with, because, hey, if I get to 900, I'll be happy. but I've never really experienced like angry followers before. Has anyone ever successfully gotten in a burn based on their research on you? You feel?
Not based on my research, because my research is so abstract and specific that, like, to get a burn that I would actually feel, they'd almost have to do the same level of research. So sure. I would be impressed. I'd have to then, like, if once you get that far, it's like, now we have to have a conversation between colleagues. So it never quite works. Usually what they'll try to do is deflate, like, oh, but it's from this university, and they'll Google something. The nice thing is I'm from the University of Toronto. So the kinds of people who hate me can't talk shit about the University of Toronto because that awful man, Jordan Peterson, teaches there now. So
who's that?
Oh, lucky you not to know who Jordan Peterson is.
I'm out
He's
of
just
loop.
Like this terrible alt-right.
Oh,
I mean, I'm making air quotes right now, but like thinker.
Oh,
he's not a
thinker.
Fun Google. He's like this he's like this anti-trans advocate, but his office door keeps getting glued shut by students.
Good. Maybe you just get him stuck in there so he can't come out. So you are my first international guest because
right.
Anthony
from the sunny shores of Canada.
That's right.
Yeah.
We are Google hanging out all the way from Canada. And mm-hmm. Do you feel comfortable saying what, or you may have already said what part of Canada you're in?
I am in Toronto, which is its own weird little beast because it is in Canada, but if you travel in 270 degrees around Toronto, you will hit America. So I'm further south than actually a fair bit of the United States. But I do still have the accent. It does come through sometimes. Occasionally, the raised A's show up. If I drop an about or two, I know you have a coin jar. If I say sorry, I'm going to be saying sorry a lot. It's just a Canadian habit.
It's fine. It's like I'm a woman, so, you know, I say sorry. Yesterday, actually, I went to – so I have a very – I do not enjoy confrontation. And so if somebody brings me the wrong food at a restaurant for a very long time, I wouldn't say anything. But I did yesterday very politely, and the waitress was so nice. And I honestly think we were both tortured by that interaction and are both probably still obsessing about it. Because I said, hey, can I actually ask for this? And she was like, I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry. And then she gave me like twice as much food. And when she came back, she said, I'm so sorry. And I was like, I'm sorry. And then I was with my boyfriend and I said, should I write I'm sorry on the receipt? He was like, what? No. What? Why are you? Why? Why? So, yes, maybe I'm Canadian.
I think a waitstaff could serve me my own arm and I wouldn't say anything. I would just be like, oh, this is perfect. This is fine. Like if I was on Hannibal, I'd be like, no, you do what you need to do.
delicious arm. So I'm curious, especially because you grew up in Canada. What is your history with Fraser? Because I don't know. What your access was. I'm sure you had NBC.
Oh,
I'm talking about you like you're from a different planet. You're in Canada.
I like it.
Yeah.
Frasier, I came to in syndication, but it was still on. I don't know when you syndicate after what, 100 episodes? So must have been in season 5 by then. But I would watch Frasier. I lived outside of Toronto, like a good hour outside of Toronto, but I had to commute every day downtown because I was at an all boys Catholic private school. It's a nightmare. Anyway, so I would get home around 4, and The Simpsons would be on at 6, and Frasier would be on at 6:30. So I'd be watching The Simpsons, and then I would watch Frasier. So 5 days a week, I would watch Daphne and Frasier and Niles have coffee at Cafe Nervosa. And it's weird because I didn't really see them in sequence. I only just recently watched the show from end to end. I only recently finally got in because it was a syndicated thing. I never saw the last few episodes because they pulled it from the run before they screened them. So I never actually knew how it ended until very recently, like a few weeks ago.
Wow.
Yeah. Like, I hadn't really seen past, I don't think, season 7. I remember Daphne and Niles running away in the RV, and that was like sort of my last memory of the show. So I never knew what the afterlife was of those characters until very recently. But that was how I came to Frasier.
So that's interesting. So you're saying that because you were watching it while it was in syndication, does that mean until just now you didn't really see the Daphne Niles storyline unfold?
I didn't. I saw them. I saw them like literally leave the wedding. I saw Daphne ditch Donnie at the altar.
Yeah.
And I was sort of left to imagine what happened after that. I knew the show had kept running, but I sort of had missed it. I had like started. I was older now, so I was like starting to have a life. So I wasn't home to see the new episodes. So it was weird seeing like where things ended up going. It's also interesting, like, just by nature of when I left at the end of season 7 is also when the creative team kind of changes. So I found the energy of the show also changed. Like, it's palpable even watching them end to end, like I just did, that tonally there is a shift, I think. So it becomes a kind of different show. So I think I left it. There are some very, very good episodes in that back end, but I left it. I feel like I got the classic show in a lot of ways.
For sure. I mean, I think having watched it, not, of course, I can't say, you know, when it started in 1993 that I remembered watching it, like what was going on. But I definitely was watching it in real time. I think I do remember when season 7 actually aired. And then, of course, I've been watching it a lot since it ended up on Netflix, which I'm assuming that's how you are also.
Actually, no, it's not on Canadian Netflix. I'm watching it on another subscription service called Crave TV, which is not very intuitive to manage. It's like, I don't even know. I think they're getting it through Rogers, or I think it's Bell, Bell Media. But it is not as like easily laid out as it is on Netflix. I should really just put like one of those non-area things on my Netflix and watch it through there. But
I mean, the crazy part is... I often think about, if Frasier was not on Netflix, would I keep it? Because that's really what I watch most of the time. It is truly, because I personally, I like, there's a lot of shows, or no, more like 4 shows, I would say, that I've watched when I was a kid and just know them. And so having them be like background noise is nice. So yeah. Frasier definitely fits that aesthetic. And, it was funny. If you didn't know, I love therapy. I'm a big fan. So, and I know that I've been told many times by articles and my own therapist not to watch anything that's too like stimulating before bed, because that's going to make it, you know, even harder to fall asleep. And I said to my therapist, she was like, my therapist was like, yeah, you shouldn't watch anything too intense. I was like, what about Frasier? And she was like, yeah, that's fine. So she gave me her blessing to watch it. A therapist approved.
It is funny watching it in sort of the Netflix model, like a model that it was never designed for. You know what I mean? Like, you were never meant to be able to watch multiple Frasier episodes in a row. You were never meant to be able to watch them without commercials. And it's interesting watching structurally how that affects the way you perceive things. Like, there's actually sometimes a deep continuity that you don't perceive over years. Like, characters who recur, like, it never even occurred to me that while I was watching it in syndication as a kid, that when Frasier talks about like these casual references to ex-girlfriends, you could remember those characters. Like, they were actually people that were on the show. It's not just like a joke that they're making for the scene. And by the same token, like we were talking about how we're going to do sort of the queer subtexts in Frasier. I was rewatching the episode at the end of season one. Mm-hmm. That's all in the my coffee with Niles. It's all in season. It's all like real time, and it's like structured by every time one of them goes to the bathroom, it goes to a commercial break, and you sort of lose that in Netflix, right?
Yeah, that definitely. It's weird. It's weird because now when I watch it, it just feels like watching a play because of those breaks. And so I no longer even think of them as like, there was a commercial there. I just think of it as like curtain closing.
Yeah,
act
right.
Act two. And then with the cute little like title for each segment. So yeah, no, that's really interesting. I never thought of it that way.
And it's like, it's also built into the joke, right? Like Frasier goes to the bathroom. And when he comes back, Niles makes a point that he took longer than it should have taken him to go to the bathroom. And it like becomes, he has to explain why he was in there for like the length of a commercial break. Right?
Sure, yeah.
Like the hand moisturizer malfunctioned or something.
He's got some OCD. do you have a favorite character? And it doesn't have to be one of the five. It could be anyone.
I was just listening to you talk to Josh Gondelman, and his argument about Maris is compelling to me. I'm interested in farce, the way that farce has to keep characters off stage, because if we ever saw them, they're too monstrous to be seen. And also we would immediately be filled with pity for them in a way that would sort of ruin the souffle of the farce. So I get that. But I always I really loved Niles. Like I really understood that sort of fussiness and that sort of like archness of character. Also David Hyde Pierce is like one of the great comedic geniuses of the 20th century. So absolutely. I loved Niles growing up, and like as a tiny little gay, he was like there's a lot about Niles that appealed to me, like not just that sort of like eruditeness, but also like I was really fascinated by stories of like impossible love, like stories of like Niles and Daphne spoke. I'm actually, as I'm saying this, making eye contact with my Phantom of the Opera poster that's right below the TV. something that like, if only she could get past my problems, she would love me. It's sort of a queer narrative in itself, but also like it lets you displace love to a place where it's like impossible for you to even imagine. And therefore you can idealize, like that's an old trope, right? Like back to chivalry, like you make the woman unattainable, and then whatever male relationships you have are sort of like okay because of you have this idealized Beatrice or whatever.
Sure.
And Daphne sort of did that for me.
I think everything you're saying leads me to a great quote from this article that I read with David Hyde Pierce. I think this was in a Vulture interview. David Hyde Pierce was talking about sort of like physical acting. And he said, so this is a quote about Niles and the way he held restraint in his body as a character. The character on Frasier is that tension between someone who is restrained but has this intense desire, and in that case, he's in love with a woman. I guess that's where that physicality came from. It's not just about the delivery of a line. It's also about how a body moves in space or illustrates a point or expresses a need or whatever those things are that I think are almost musical. I thought that was great. He's very restrained, for sure. Like, I want to see him on stage. I never have. And, you know, that's what he's doing now, I think, is just being on stage. Also, when I was a kid, I didn't take the time as a kid, like as a 12, 13-year-old, honest to God, even in my own life, was not necessarily thinking about sexuality, if that makes sense. So like when I watched that show, I did not consider for even a moment what these characters as actors were like in real life, or if anybody was gay in real life, including Niles.
We had very different experiences.
Yeah, most people
I went to an all boys Catholic, so I was not dealing with, like, I was very self-consciously not processing a lot of things that were going on in my psyche.
Sure.
And I think that you sort of, that quote from David Hyde Pierce is so, like, that's actually more than his mannerisms. That's the queer thing about Niles, is that he has a secret that he desperately wants to, like, the queerness of the Niles Daphne relationship is that he can't say what it is he feels desperately he needs to say. Mm-hmm. And that's sort of like, that's why he's so good at it. That's why David Hyde, I mean, he's, as Niles, playing a character who has a secret, even as David Hyde Pierce was still not out, right? Like, he wasn't publicly acknowledging, like, he was living one of the great, I mean, really one of the great love stories of the 20th century's comedies. Like, Daphne and Niles is up there.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Sort of like Sam Diane was for Cheers. Right. They're the Sam and Diane of this show.
For sure.
Even as he can't express his own desires, right? Like, every time he's asked about the Daphne Niles thing, it's going to come up and he can't talk about it. So there is something about the doubling of that that is pregnant throughout the show, right? Like, this is a show that is, David Lee, the creator, was gay. Mm-hmm. Joe Keenan, who came on in season 2 and ran until season 7 and then came back for season 11, is a gay writer. Almost every actor except Kelsey Grammer was gay.
I didn't know that. And then I started looking up everyone because I had only heard other people tell me that Bulldog, a.k.a. Dan Butler, was gay. And he's openly gay. Like,
yeah.
Didn't
even
have
at the
a clue.
Time he was, which is a huge, that was a huge deal. I think he ended up marrying Dan Butler. He was out at the time. And I think he was actually ended up marrying, I forget who he married on the show, but he married like someone behind the scenes.
Oh.
Ed Hibbert, who plays Gil, was gay. He is gay. He actually, a friend was telling me he plays an amazing Lady Bracknell in The Importance of Being Earnest.
I'm not familiar, I will take your word.
Oh my God. It is. If you haven't seen, there's a great, I think it's from the 40s, a film version of Importance of Being Earnest.
Okay.
Lady Bracknell is like the arch diva of the show. Is the best one-liners you ever heard. If you enjoy the farce of Frasier, you must watch Importance of Being Earnest because that is,
all right.
That is where its DNA comes from.
I'm writing it down. I've heard of it, but I haven't.
Don't watch the 90s version because it's too winky. It's too self-aware. Watch the 1940s original version. There's like a Criterion version of it. It has every line is like a gem. It's also about this sort of like the unspeakable secret, right? Like Importance of Being Earnest is about a character who can't reveal the great secret of his past, which is that he was found in a railway station. And Lady Bracknell is the great blocking figure where she's like, well, to have lost one parent is a tragedy. To have lost both parents can be accounted as carelessness, right? So you have to watch it.
I feel like you, if you haven't already, should do some, I feel like you could do a whole class just on the topic that we're talking about right now, honestly.
Would the nice thing about watching Frasier again end to end like this is to sort of think about the nature of how farce has changed on the stage and the way that television, Joe Keenan, who wrote a lot of the, if we're going to talk about queerness on the show, Joe Keenan wrote the gayest episodes of Frasier. He also wrote the best episodes of Frasier. And he also wrote, he was the great farceur of the show. Like, he writes 20-minute plays that are structured like old French farces, right? Like, the Ski Lodge episode. Ski Lodge is going to come up in anybody's top 10 episodes of Frasier. The Ski Lodge is going to come up. Also with a gay element to it, but designed like a farce. Like, the set changes and suddenly we have all these doors that the characters have to go in and out of. That's like classic farce. I've been reading his book, Blue Heaven, which actually is right here in front of me.
Ooh.
If you enjoy Frasier, you should pick up Joe Keenan's Blue Heaven.
I'm writing everything you say down. Blue Heaven?
Blue Heaven, it's called, yeah. It's a novel, a farce novel. It's about, if you want to talk about queerness in Frasier, like, so plot of Blue Heaven, it's about these two gay, like, poor New York artists who get into these scrapes, and one of them, every chapter is basically an episode of Frasier, except the cast is now explicitly gay, right? They're like 90s homosexuals and they're like amazing, like, diva friends, and the overarching plot of the book is that Gilbert, the sort of more caddish of the two friends, has decided the best get rich quick scheme is to defraud his family, which are connected to the mob, and his Beard's family, who are connected to English royalty, by mm-hmm. staging a scam wedding. So he's a gay man marrying his Beard to trick all these families into giving them gifts.
No, there's you've already described parts of episodes of Frasier where there was a misunderstanding of somebody's sexuality.
Yes, yeah.
Now, I want to be honest, and sometimes I pretend I know what words mean. So I'd like to go back because I love Ski Lodge. Ski Lodge, the Ski Lodge is, like you said, one of everyone's favorite episodes. I have not seen a lot of plays, but I recognize, at least for me watching that, it feels like I'm watching a play with all the doors and all the misunderstandings. Uh-huh. So when you say French farce, is that like, what is that?
Oh, French farce. Okay. So the example, okay. Have you seen like a Three's Company episode? Like,
sure. Yeah.
Yeah. So classic French farce is like, if one person said one sentence that explained the plot, the whole episode would collapse. That's what like a good French farce is. So like, like the ending of the Ski Lodge, where everyone sort of realizes, oh, we've all been chasing the wrong person.
Yes.
Or the other Joe Keenan episode is the Matchmaker,
yes.
where Frasier invites his boss over, not realizing his boss is gay, not mm-hmm. realizing his boss has interpreted him to be gay. Like right. Or Joe Keenan's other episode, which actually doesn't contain any queer elements, but is also like, if you were going to make a list of like the top three episodes of Frasier, you'd mm-hmm. probably put the two Mrs. Cranes on there, where Daphne is meeting her ex-fiance Clive, who she doesn't want to marry. She doesn't want to marry him, even though they have this like agreement that they'll get back together. Yeah. So she has to like create this false life, but the mm-hmm. lies keep escalating.
Right.
Roz becomes interested in him too. Daphne decides she wants to be with him. Mm-hmm. Roz gives her a baby that she doesn't have, and it collapses when Clive comes out of the bathroom and hears Daphne scream, "How am I going to get rid of this bloody baby?" Right? So that's what a farce is. It's like a series of misunderstandings that build to like a climactic exposure of the like the lies, the moment where everyone on stage is exposed for having been a liar the whole time.
I'm glad that somebody finally explained that device to me, because that's like what I love about Frasier, and I could never put it into words, which is that I constantly tell people, especially with episodes like the Ski Lodge, that it feels like a mathematical equation almost.
Yes,
just that
yeah.
you have to like write all of these misunderstandings perfectly in and have them like implode at the end.
Yeah.
And now there's a word Keenan, for it.
Joe Keenan talks about how he was on vacation writing that episode mm-hmm. and he was drawing all these graphs because he was like, okay, she's after him, he's after her, but he has to think this. There's that great, like, almost curtain call moment where they're all looking out the window at the deer, where Martin is like, anything could happen or something, and we watch them all check each other out. Like, that's, like, very stagey. The other episode I really love that's kind of a farce is the one where they're, Frasier's recording Nightmare Inn.
Yes.
And they're... And like, it's basically a radio drama. The joke is that you can see them filming the radio drama and they're like popping the balloons to kill each other off, right? Like,
yes. Do you know what's interesting? Like, when you were talking about French farce, so I know that you and I didn't necessarily get super into the last like three seasons of the show. Mm. But as I was looking up, because you know, I essentially made a list of episodes that came to mind in my head that involved, you know, some kind of gay plot line. And then one popped up that I completely forgot about, which is actually all the way from season 11. Mm-hmm. It's called The Doctor Is Out.
Yes.
And,
yeah.
Oh, you're familiar?
Yeah. Guess who wrote it?
Joe Keenan?
Yep.
The log line for
sure
this.
That's true. That might not be true.
Oh, well, the log line for this is a misunderstanding leads the town to believe that Frasier is gay.
Oh, it is. It's Joe Keenan coming back for season 11. Yeah, he wrote a few. That's him. Yeah.
makes sense. What's interesting, though, now, especially after you've been talking about French farce, which I'm now going to purposely try and inject in every conversation I have because it just sounds really smart. Just saying. I did notice that similarly, it's a situation where, you know, somebody, a man is attracted to Frasier, but this time Frasier knows. And one of my sort of favorite parts of this episode was like the very end where essentially, I don't remember his name, but the actor Patrick Stewart says something like, Alistair, can I somehow convince you to be my boyfriend? And Frasier, you can tell, is truly considering it.
He says something like, Frasier, it's what I like about the later seasons now that I've been watching them is that this farce quality becomes increasingly Baroque. Like, they have done it so many times that they kind of assume the audience will follow along. So one of my favorite farce episodes is Daphne has the dinner party.
Can I pause you for one sec? Oh, no, sure, no, it's working. Sorry. I thought something was not working. Okay. Start that sentence over. Yes. Go ahead. Daphne.
Yes. So I'm going to come back to the doctor is out in a second. But like what I like about this sort of late series Baroqueness, sort of it can get very mannerist about itself. It can start you. It assumes you will understand how a basic Frasier farce episode works. Not every Frasier episode is a farce. Like some of them are like My Coffee with Niles, where it's just like they quietly have coffee for a while. Mm-hmm. But when it's one of these like madcap scheme episodes, by the later, after season seven, they kind of assume you'll get it. So when you watch the beginning of Daphne goes to dinner or Daphne does dinner, it starts at the end of the farce plot. So Frasier has already lied to this woman about having Tourette's syndrome. Something is already on fire, right? Like, I don't know. You need to, the beginning of it is amazing. The scene ends with Martin coming in wearing a sash declaring he's the Duke of like Italy or something. And he's like, buongiorno. Like, and everyone is like, don't worry about it, Dad. It's over. And we never see what that plot even was. Yes. And what's amazing about that episode is Daphne is like, listen, you guys cannot have dinner parties anymore. Because even in the universe of Frasier, the characters inside it have now learned the rules. And they're like, when you have a dinner party, it goes so wrong. We can't have them anymore. And of course, she tries to have a normal one. And it ends like literally with the bed falling through the ceiling, right? That's also what's good about The Doctor is Out, is that everybody in it knows what's happening. Everybody knows Frasier has been mistaken for gay, right, and are trying to tell him, listen, this is what the plot is. You have been mistaken for gay. This man believes you are his boyfriend. And Frasier is constantly denying it. And quickly we realize that he knows that's the plot, and yet he's enjoying it so much. He's just playing along. And the sort of punchline of the episode is when he says, like, listen, I'm not going to have sex with you, but he's loving the fame. He says, like, I'm finally in a power couple. Is it perfect? No. And Patrick Stewart's character says, would 3 weeks at Bertolucci's villa change your mind? And the joke is how long it takes Frasier to respond.
No, I mean, I really thought he was going to go along with it for...
I mean, just that would be... That's like the pleasure of it, is like how far earlier in the episode... Alice says, is there anything you can't do? And Niall says, time will tell, because there's no way to know when it'll end. That episode is weird because they do talk about, it's one of the meanest episodes about queerness too. Like, they joke about Roz's boyfriend in it quite a bit.
Yes. That's like how the whole farce begins, because they think that her boyfriend is gay because he is good looking.
He is muscly, and he is the women's shopper for some department store, and he rearranges Roz's closet.
Right.
Yeah. And then they watch him pass the gay bar and he disappears while Frasier is trapped inside Niles's little short shorts.
Yes, in his teeny tiny short shorts. So sometimes I think about, especially in this episode, and I feel like it might actually be accurate, so it's I go back and forth. But I think it's pretty obvious, especially in this episode, that, you know, Martin is from an older generation. Okay. And I feel like he often makes reference to the fact that, like, his sons never wanted to do sports. And then there, I remember the episode, the dinner party, where, which is one of my favorite episodes, by the way. That's when Frasier and Niles plan a dinner party. The whole episode takes place in Frasier's apartment. Yeah. And then like somebody leaves a message that essentially says that they're like weird, the Frasier and Niles, and they're kind of like a couple. Right. And then when they
You get that other one. That's the recording? Oh, God.
Yeah. And when they ask Martin about it, they say, do you think we're weird? And he goes, no, you're just special. So I don't know. It's interesting because I feel like he's probably a good representation of what somebody his age might think. But I'm curious what you think.
Yeah. I mean, again, like we were talking about how everyone in the cast is gay. John Mahoney is a strange case because he never quite, you'll never find the pull quote where John Mahoney says, I'm gay. Yeah. Like it doesn't exist. Mm-hmm. However, he did star, he was like in Broken Hearts Club. He did several interviews for Out Magazine. Whenever sexuality came up, he instead sort of demurred and would talk about, talked a lot about how he had like surgery, had like a colostomy bag, and therefore in his mind, he was no longer eligible to be loved, which is a very sad narrative. But that was always how he deferred the question. So that being said, like he also did, I think it's an episode of ER or something, one of those procedurals where he played like an aging drag queen.
Wow.
It's something that like, it's part of his performance, I think, is this sort of the same thing that makes Bulldog so fascinating to watch and so sort of toothless to watch. Like Bulldog is a very gross, fratty character, but
for sure,
we always sense there's something of a burlesque of masculinity about him. Mm-hmm. And I think that's true of Mahoney's Martin too, is that he always reads to us like we can trust him. Like he's always going to be the good dad. He's always going to love his sons. Mm-hmm. He may make a weird remark or two, but he's a gentle, like when one of the other queer episodes is the one with David Ogden Stier, so we also just lost. He plays, what is that character's name? He plays Hester's old grad student.
Which episode was this?
This is, Fathers and Sons, it's called. It's 1022. David Ogden Stier plays Leland Barton. He's like, David Ogden Stier was, he used to be on MASH. He was the voice of Cogsworth and like, he was like a Disney voice. Like if you watched a Disney movie in the 90s, he's in it. He played like Radcliffe. Uh-huh. He has that very distinctive, mellifluous voice. Anyway, he plays Hester's old grad student who's coming to town to visit the Cranes. And the plot of the episode is that Martin thinks this man might actually be Frasier and Niles' father because he was close. He was close to Hester at the time. Martin, over the course of the series, spends a lot of time dealing with the fact that he knows for a fact his wife cheated on him.
Right, yeah. Find that early wonders, on.
Very early on. And this, and he wondered, it becomes a plot point in this episode when he's talking to Roz. Roz says, like, you know, she would never cheat on you. And he says, actually, she did. So it's like, anyway, the culmination of the episode is he finally confronts Leland about the fact that he suspects that Frasier and Niles are his children. Mm-hmm. And Leland says, I loved her. And Martin says, well, my question then is, how much did you love her? And he says, I loved her enough to tell her I was gay. And Martin is like stunned. And there's like a weird laugh from the audience. But Martin is immediately like so loving to Leland.
Yeah.
Their goodbye is so kind to each other. Mm-hmm. It's this moment of like mutual recognition of this woman they both lost. And then Martin walks into the house and he's like, my boys. And Frasier and Niles are, of course, immediately at their most gay. They're singing this like old Gilbert and Sullivan song about like Tommy Titmouse.
Oh my God.
And that's always been the energy of the show. Like even earlier in that episode, when Leland walks into the apartment, he meets Martin. He's like, hey Martin, it's been a long time since I've seen you. He meets Frasier. And he's like, wow, I haven't seen you since you were 7 years old. You still look really good in a suit. And then he turns around and meets Roz, and he is so kind, so loving. He shakes her hand and he says, oh, I guess you don't go by Niles anymore.
Oh my!
And it's just like, that's kind of the weird, that tells you sort of everything about the show's queerness, is like, It's an uncomfortable joke. It's a dated joke.
For sure.
And yet behind it is a warmth. Behind it is an acceptingness. Even in the episode where Frasier comes out by accident, he's like, I've had gay friends before. Like, this is not an issue for him.
Yeah. I mean, I would say the difference between, you know, the treatment of gay characters or just being gay as a plot in this show versus Friends is that, you know, with Friends, anytime like, anytime anyone is gay, it's just used as like an insult.
Yes,
that's seemingly different. I mean, seemingly on Frasier, a lot of it is sort of poking fun at stereotypes. A lot of like, oh, if you know, very well dressed men that go to the opera and the misunderstandings that go along with it sometimes.
Like Friends is a good, like that's what, that debuted what, a year after Frasier?
Yeah, it was 93 and then 94, yeah. Mm-hmm.
And like Seinfeld is its other contemporary, like, of course when you're watching these things, you have to make a certain allowance for the fact that it was, what, 30 years ago? So
oh God.
not every use of language is going to be quite what you would hope it would be.
Not just that though, given what you were saying about who was writing for Frasier, I don't think the same can be said for Friends or Seinfeld, that there were gay writers.
And so much of Friends is about, I mean, so much of Friends for me, which I also just rewatched all
of course. It's on I mean, for me, like, it's on Netflix. I rewatched it.
Like all those gay jokes, and there are so many, are all about, like Friends for me is a show about, okay, like even as its sort of theme song announces, like you didn't get married at 18, you didn't get married at 20, you didn't have the life your parents had. How do you negotiate the idea of being a 20-something, an early 30-something, for which there is no model, for which there is no pre-existing? Like Friends sort of invents a kind of second adolescence for a generation, basically. But the anxiety behind that is, if you're not attached, if you're not married, and you have a male roommate, and you have like these close male-male relationships,
right,
you're going to be anxious that that's a gay relationship. Like that's what the Chandler Joey thing is all about. Chandler's sort of still figuring himself out in this weird way. He has his issues with his father. The show keeps calling it his father, but it's clearly
Kathleen
again like
Turner.
The language almost hasn't been exist. Yeah, like
sure,
it's clearly a trans narrative, not a gay narrative, even though the show doesn't have language for that.
No, definitely not.
Whereas Frasier has none of that. Frasier's not afraid to be perceived as gay.
No, not at all. And you know what else I also love about Frasier is, separately, I'm sure probably if I looked hard enough, I could find some montages of like every joke associated with Gil being closeted. But there are just so many little gems. And one of them I wrote down, or I wrote down a few, but I liked his reference to his wife, Deb.
Yes,
who I believe works at a car garage. So I really enjoyed that. And then very early on, I rewatched recently an episode from season one where Frasier starts going through some kind of midlife crisis. A 22-year-old woman hits on him at a clothing store and she works there. And then when she goes to see him at work to bring him his pants, she meets Bulldog. And then she says to Frasier, "Is he gay? It seems like he's really overcompensating." I was like, oh, that's really self-aware. Yeah, he is overcompensating. Yeah.
The Gil joke I always remember is the Halloween party. Mm. I think Martin is dressed as Sherlock Holmes.
Yep.
And Gil is dressed. Doesn't tell us. Yeah, he asks him who he's dressed as. He says, "I'm the last of the Mohicans." Mm-hmm. And Martin, like to the punch bowl, is like, "That little mystery solved." Gil plot. I wish they hadn't resolved it, because the question of the Gil plot for me is always, is this a deeply closeted man, or is the joke that he actually is straight and like Frasier, he's like this like effeminate man who has every gay stereotype attached to him but is in fact straight? I think that was a pleasurable quantum unsolvability that the Doctor Is Out finally solves for us, because at the end in the stinger, while Kelsey Grammer singing about tossed salads and scrambled eggs, we see Gil descend into the gay bar.
That's right.
And I think that was a mistake. I wish it had stayed completely unsolved.
I agree. You know what? And as you bring that up, I completely forgot to add to this list another episode I really like, which is when Frasier has a sexy dream about Gil.
Yes.
I love that episode. I don't remember how it's resolved, But I think it ends with him having another dream, except now it's about Freud.
Yes.
In bed.
Yeah. Yeah. Frasier is having dreams that he's in a seedy hotel room.
Mm-hmm.
He wakes up alone. He looks at his arm and sees the tattoo chesty.
Chesty
is the
LaRue.
Word chesty. Yeah. And then he, and then the shower stops running and Gil emerges naked. Yeah. And it's very clear they've just spent the night together or are about to go for a second round. And he's like consulting. He's like tries to talk to his dad about it. And he says, and then from the shower comes a man, and his dad's face is like horrified. And Frasier is so alarmed. He's like, eating lion. And he's like, oh, okay. But again, like when he talks to Niles about it, he's like, we can skip the obvious interpretation, right? Like, he's like refuses to accept that a man, he's too old to be latent, right? Like,
yes,
he deals with gay people. He's like okay with it.
Mm-hmm.
He just has that 90s discomfort of like, well, I'm not.
Exactly.
Like, there's still the sizzle of like, it's an insult to be perceived as, but it's part of his life. Like, he doesn't have a problem with Gil, you know?
No. And Gil, also, I just like the name Gil Chesterton.
Yes, it's perfect.
So British.
It's a very Oscar Wilde kind of name, like Lady Bracknell. Like, it has that kind of like, it's delightful to say.
So I wanted to bring up another episode with Lilith, because Lilith, I have many thoughts on. I mean, you know, she and Maris are often grouped into the same like ice cold, mm-hmm. pale witch women. Now, I started to think about this sort of like, where is her sexuality? Because I remember one sort of episode was she ends up sleeping with Niles. This is a direct result of her husband leaving her for a man.
Yes, that's right. I forgot about that.
Her husband leaves her for a man. And then even in general, and also within that episode, I think she's definitely sort of framed as being this very like domineering presence.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know if you have any thoughts on Lilith, but
yeah, actually it's funny. I was, I sort of, in preparation for talking to you, I was like listing all the moments I could remember of like explicit sort of gay content.
Uh-huh.
And just by nature of who was working on the show, there's a lot of male things, but I was like,
sure,
what are the good like lesbian moments in mm-hmm. the text?
Mm-hmm.
And I was talking to a friend of mine, and she was like, well, Lilith is like a gay icon. Uh-huh. Like, she said Lilith was my big first crush. And it's uh-huh. like, there's something queer about Lilith too. Like, gay men and lesbian women sort of respond to these like over the top ice queen divas, right? Like,
sure.
Lilith walks into a room and is immediately the top, right? Like, mm-hmm. Frasier is completely dominated by her.
Mm-hmm.
Maris, even from off stage, Niles completely cowed, right?
Yep.
Like,
mm-hmm.
There's something of the diva, and there's something great about that episode where she breaks down, right? Like, it's Lilith that is her most human,
yeah.
mm-hmm. At her most, emasculated is the wrong word, but like,
vulnerable.
Vulnerable, yeah. We see her hair down in that, right? Like, and
Frasier
is like, I've never seen your hair down. She's like, yes, I spent 2 hours thinking about it and decided to be playful. we like watching, it's sort of the same pleasure you were talking about with Niles, is like, we like watching characters whose whole personality is being tied up start to unravel.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what the pleasure is of that episode. And of course, she immediately gets capitulated into another one of these farce plots, right? Where she has to hide in the bathroom.
Or Niles has to hide in the bathroom.
Right?
That's right.
And they're like, everyone's like, eggs in the bathroom, right? Because the breakfast cart goes in.
I also, just upon rewatching some episodes with her, she definitely also had a very specific style, I would
yes.
say, which I really yeah. liked. It definitely reminded me of like early, well, I think also that, I think Frasier came before Sex and the City, but the way she dressed reminded me of the way Miranda dressed on Sex and the City. But she was very much like pro trench coats and mm-hmm. Khakis, but like, you know, slightly
very
feminine.
Severe bun, right?
Oh, the bun. It was just so tight.
B.B. Newworth is a dancer, right? And like that energy of like just
B.B.
being wound. Yeah, that energy of just being wound
yes.
so tight is in there. That bun is like pure, like prima ballerina, right? Like there's something of Lilith where it's just like, again, I'm looking at that Phantom of the Opera poster, like Madame Giry, like the severe commanding ballet master. Something of that is in Lilith.
For sure. And there's definitely a lot of the women too, not a lot, but there's a few that stick out to me that are sort of dominating, that are the ones that come back into Fraser's life. I mean, B.B. Glazer, the character, is one of my favorite recurring characters. And then, I mean, I remember when he dates the former or then station manager, Kate Costas, who like challenges him. Yeah. So he definitely seems to have an affinity for women
that control him. Yeah. There's also that episode where he dates, is she like she's like a celebrity lawyer or something. She's like on CNN.
Yes.
And Fraser becomes like her real housewife, right?
Right. Like, they switch roles.
Yes.
He's the woman.
Yeah, we're both making a lot of air quotes right now.
Yes. I don't fully know what they mean, but
he's showing like the other wives his new watch, right? He's like, oh, she got this for me. The show is full. When a woman emerges into Fraser's life, she's always like this larger than life. Almost like a burlesque of like the uncontrollable woman, right? Like B.B. Glazer is the last time we see B.B., she erupts out of like that steaming bathroom and she's like coming from the mouth of hell, right? Like seduce him one last time. The episode I really like is Dr. Nora. Again, that's a that's also a Joe Keenan episode with, oh my God, how am I blanking on her name?
Christine Baranski.
Yes, Baranski. I know her. As this sort of like Anita Bryant kind of character, right? Like she's like a fake psychiatrist who's like quite chaste. She has that moment where a woman calls in, she's bisexual, and she calls her an equal opportunity slut.
Yeah,
right.
Like that. Yeah.
There's something queer about those women who hate gays too, right?
Yeah, for sure. And also the way you described the unraveling, which happens so gloriously at the end. Correct me if I'm wrong. I might be wrong. But the mom at the end, I believe, is also the mom in Carrie.
Yes, that's exactly who it is. Yeah.
It's great casting.
Yeah, she runs screaming.
Screaming. It was fantastic. One more episode that I wanted to mention, which was, I think this might have been a Valentine's Day episode. Out with Dad. Yeah, Out with Dad was great, especially because in retrospect, it's like Martin only knows what he thinks being gay is. And so like, I remember when he goes, I'll gay it up.
Right.
And he just starts going, your hair looks divine. It was like a cringeworthy moment, but
That's another Joe Keenan episode.
Coincidence?
And self-conscious about it, actually. We were talking about like the origins of farce. Mm-hmm. That episode. So he goes to the opera with Fraser. Mm-hmm. Because Fraser wants to meet a woman there and he can't go alone, but he can't go with a date. So he convinces Martin to come and they're sitting in the box. And Martin gives a little speech about farce plots where he says, like, I hate these opera things. They're always so unbelievable. If someone just said what was going on and Fraser's like, no, it's perfectly understandable. Rigoletto is a hunchback and he's living with his daughter, but everyone thinks it's his mistress and they're trying to seduce the Duke who's in disguise as like a, and Martin's like, see, that's ridiculous. And then they immediately fall in themselves into a farce plot, right? Where he waves across to the woman. Martin immediately is, the woman's mother mistakes Martin for waving to her. So he lies to her to spare her feelings to say he's gay. And he's immediately set up with their uncle.
Who's British.
Yes.
Has a Gil Chesterton vibe. I say that because he was gay and British. That's really my only.
Well, it's a plot point, right? Like Martin can't detect that he's gay because he assumes he's just British, right? Like you can't tell. Like,
of course. Very hard to tell. Definitely. Right. Yeah. Between him, Sir Patrick Stewart and Gil, there's definitely, I don't think it's a coincidence, a lot of the gay love interests have been British on this show.
That's true. I hadn't thought of that.
And now is just maybe, I don't know if this is reaching very far, but like in that episode, The Matchmaker, the guy that likes Fraser, the station manager, isn't British, but he has just broken up with somebody in the UK, and he's just come
and they
back
actually
from there.
He and Fraser bond over their mutual love of London. That's literally their first conversation.
It makes me want to know more about Joe Keenan and his romantic history.
That's true, huh?
That's right.
Why would that be? I guess it's like it gives you a cover for why a man might be cultured.
Sure.
That lets you have that frisson of ambiguity. Like in every case, it's like, well, he's just British. it's amazing. Patrick Stewart is clearly, in retrospect, Ian McKellen wasn't well known yet outside mm-hmm. of the British scene, but Patrick Stewart is clearly doing his impression of Ian McKellen that whole episode when you watch it.
Yes. Now I want to rewatch it again, even though I already saw it today, because that sounds, it's definitely, it was a, would you say it was over the top? It was very, I don't know, musical. Just everything that he said and the way
Niles
that he
has
spoke.
One of my favorite lines about camp, I think ever. Like if I was writing like an essay about camp, like we don't need another one. But he says, Patrick Stewart's character, he's like an opera director, and he says something terrible about, he's staging La Boheme, and he says, I wish I could get my Mimi to stop eating cheeseburgers. I said to her, honey, you're dying of consumption, not overconsumption. And Fraser and Niles both laugh. And Niles says, it's funny because it's bitchy. And like, that is like, puts its nail like right on the head of like, what is camp? Funny because it's bitchy. Like that's sort of the pleasure of a lot of these queer episodes of Fraser, I think. I was thinking about like, well, what would be an episode where, there's the episode, you remember the one where Fraser is talking, he's like dealing with Frederick. And he's like, why should you be a good person? And he goes into an elaborate dream sequence where he imagines picking up this woman who needs help.
Yes.
And then suddenly the actor flips and it's not a woman anymore. And it's like, we're supposed to understand this was like a trans sex worker.
Yes.
It's like picking up all that stuff from the 90s of like Hugh Grant and Eddie Murphy. And again, it's like, yes, the joke is that she's trans and we're supposed to sort of laugh at the mistake. But Fraser is oddly kind to her. Like, in the later scene when they're at the hotel, when they're at jail, he's like, well, they've been clearly been talking and they've like built up a rapport and he's like hoping the best for her. Like, it's like the perfect line of like, yeah, it was the 90s. Yeah, they didn't get it. But when you compare that to the way Friends would have handled that joke, it's like a very different show.
Completely different. I mean, you meet in Friends, you meet his dad.
Yes.
Played by Kathleen Turner. And I wouldn't say that storyline was treated with respect. I would say. I mean, I think Fraser, I would say, yes, you definitely saw that he had empathy. I wouldn't say until very recently, though. I feel like it was still sort of a butt of the joke. Just.
Yeah. Whereas, like there's another episode where Fraser is sort of confronting his bully, Billy Creasel. And Niles is terrified. He doesn't even want to see him. Mm-hmm. He says, tell him I'm abroad. Like, tell him I'm in Europe. And Fraser repeats the line to Billy. He's like, oh, Niles is abroad now. But Billy thinks he means abroad. Like, he's a woman now. Right. Billy is oddly okay with that, too. He's like, good for him. Like, it's like this weird, like, the energy of the show is so bizarre in that it's like always oddly capacious for these people. It's fascinating. I don't know.
No, you know, I remembered also at the end of the Matchmaker episode where they're sort of going over the list of people that the station manager thought was gay, including Martin. And then he says, but Niles, come on. And then I think he says something like Maris. He was talking about a woman. I thought that was really
What's amazing is he's been given no indication. Like, Fraser has said something that made him think Martin was gay, but no one has said anything to make him think Niles is gay. He just assumed.
Yeah. And I mean, in retrospect, yes, it definitely, I would have questioned his sexuality had I started watching this show now, which is, it's always mind blowing to me. And of course now people are going to start watching shows they didn't get to watch when we, you know, when they were on, but it definitely, for me, there's a nostalgia that I connect to Frasier. But I've had people on here that only watched it on Netflix all the way through. And it's like,
oh, wow.
Blew my mind.
Yeah. I mean, it's a time capsule. I think one of the things to say about it is, as much as some of these jokes are, you know, capital P problematic, when put in context, it is striking. Frasier is one of the first shows I can think of where the joke became that there are gay people in the world. You're just meant to take that as true. And the problem is you if you have a problem with it, you know, like
right.
The joke is on Martin for getting uncomfortable. There's even in the episode we were talking about, Daphne does dinner. There's a gay couple at that dinner party. And the joke is never that they're gay. They come in and we're supposed to be sophisticated enough to be like, yeah, there's going to be gays at a dinner party. It'd be crazy not to have gays at your dinner party. And they also get to be, actually, they're delightfully bitchy themselves, right? Like, they keep bragging on how badly Daphne's dinner party is going. When the bed falls through the ceiling, they're the ones who get to make the crack about it. They make the crack that everybody else gets to make in the show about how Frasier and Niles are way too close, right? They're a de facto couple. Riding on their bicycle built for two, right?
Like, I need to rewatch that episode. If I've learned
anything. An interracial gay couple too.
Oh, okay, yeah, no, I'll probably have to rewatch the last three seasons. I do tend to, I'm guilty of stopping after season eight. But if I've learned anything from this hour, I would say, I know the words French farce, and I will probably misuse them at some point. But I truly feel like if it doesn't already exist, and if I were still in college, because I took one TV class in college because it was the only one available, and I regret it because I didn't even watch it, which was a class about South Park. And now I'm like, who cares? But if there had been like a class about like queer cinema and queer TV, I would have taken it. And you could teach it.
Oh, I would love to do a course on Frasier.
Be great. You've got 11 seasons. Then you could also start going back into Cheers if you wanted to.
I am like you. I haven't watched much Cheers.
Yeah, I haven't watched much Cheers. And actually, in a week or two, I have another guest coming who were reversed. He's seen all of Cheers, only a few Frasier. So we assigned each other episodes to watch. So he gave me a few episodes of Cheers. And if you're interested, I'll happily send it to you. He sent me one where you meet Frasier's mom.
Oh, that's right. The show has I think I've seen that one. The show has a problem because Hester is so mean on Cheers.
Yeah, she's like a nutcase. It's like pretty crazy. And it's like, I don't know. And I think they sort of don't really include that in Frasier, the portrayal. And then she's played by Rita Wilson in that cabin episode, which I really like that episode. But you definitely get this sense that she's this like gentle, you know, loving.
Well, we meet her. Rita Wilson plays her as herself in that the Don Juan in Hell episode,
yes,
too, right?
That's right. Yeah.
So there's two. There's the one where Frasier's dating a woman who looks just like his mom.
Yep. Great.
And then we meet. Yeah. And she's like in the pearls. Oh, she's also in that really sad one where they're watching. Oh, it's the same one where they're watching the video of her and she mouths, "I love you."
Yeah. And then they
Martin
all cry
just, like,
at the end.
Reaches for the screen.
Aww. It was very emotional. on that note, I want to thank you for being a guest. I feel smarter after this hour. I'm generally surrounded by other comics who didn't even think of going to grad school, you know.
Well, it was a spectacular mistake for me to go to grad school. But now when I watch episodes of Frasier, I'm very tiresome.
There you go. Before we go our separate ways, is there anything you would like to plug or anything particular?
I mean, I'm on Twitter, Mia Koopa, MEAKOOPA. I'm doing a little mini podcast every week. I'm working on a project that has made me need to reread John Milton's Paradise Lost. Ooh. So I'm doing a project where I'm reading it and then sort of doing 20-minute discussions, like a little book club. It's called The Devil's Party.
Cool.
You can find that at patreon.com/MiaKoopa. I just sort of like walk through like 300 lines a week and think about like, what's he saying? Because it's a very difficult poem. And like, what were the sort of cultural afterlives? So this week we talked about the demons in hell and like, well, this guy ends up being on Buffy the Vampire Slayer, stuff like that. So
I'll definitely check that out. And yes, if you don't follow Anthony on Twitter, you should, because he post some.
Thank you.
Post some
and gold. Thank you so much for having me.
Of this course.
Been,
yes.
I can't believe it's been an hour. That's it. Like, oh my God, this is so much fun. If you ever need me again, please.
Of course. Thank you so much, Anthony, for being here. And until next time, good night, Seattle. Yeah, that's how I like to end it. Does it make any sense? No, it doesn't.